That was Let's Draw from the album of the same name by Bounce Patrol. We're learning about animation today on the Children's Hour with our intern Daniel. Up next, the golden age of animation lasted about 30 years, beginning in the 1920s. Daniel explains.
If I were to ask you what the first movie in color was, what would you say? If you said The Wizard of Oz, you'd be wrong, because Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs came out 2 years earlier. I mean, Snow White was also not the first movie shown in color, because a French film released in 1902 titled A Trip to the Moon also had color. And there are a few other colored movies that came out before Snow White, but Snow White is the movie we're focusing on right now because it was the first feature-length animated movie. And that color changed how animation was made. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was one of the most artistically influential movies in animation history, and we'll talk about why that is later, but right now I want to discuss how the movie was made. The first step in creating a traditional animated film is writing the story and creating what is called a storyboard. In a storyboard, artists will draw the most important moments of the film and plan out how the story will progress and look. This is essential because without a storyboard, the animators would know nothing about when or how characters talked, when scenes started or stopped, and what they needed to include in the first place. Then the animators got to work, drawing in detail every character and every movement for the movie's 1 hour and 23 minute runtime. Furthermore, movies play by using frames, which are still pictures that when played in rapid succession, create the illusion of movement. And because Snow White played at 24 frames per second, animators had to draw these characters and movements 24 times just to make a single second of film. However, these animators did not draw the backgrounds or paint to color, because while Disney animators had used them many times before, this movie popularized something called cells, clear sheets of plastic, which became the most commonly used method for animation until the 1990s. If you think back to Gertie the Dinosaur, a film I mentioned earlier, the entire background had to be redrawn again for every image. This cost a lot of time and money, leading many people to believe that it would be impossible to make a detailed animation run for an hour or more. But this all changed with the introduction of cells. With cells, a background would only need to be drawn once, as all of the characters would be drawn on their own cell sheets that would then be placed on top of the background. Furthermore, characters were often created using many different cell sheets so that different parts of the character can move independently. An example of this would be if a character's body became paralyzed with fear, but their head turned to look at a scary monster. The head and body could be drawn on different cells, so that the still body would only need to be drawn once, while the turning head would be redrawn multiple times. But these cells were not created by the animators. These cells, instead, were created by the inkers and painters at Disney. Now is the perfect time to mention the often overlooked, but extremely important role women played in early animation. Due to unfair hiring practices, women were not allowed to be animators at Disney until 1941. But women entirely made up Disney's inking and painting departments. These women took the drawings made by the animators and transferred them to cell sheets, adding thick black lines and vibrant colors. Furthermore, Mary Wiser, a painter turned chemist, created a unique paint solution designed both to resist cracking under the California heat and stick firmly to the cell sheets. While these women were heavily responsible for the success of Disney, many of these women were not credited for their work. Finally, after all the animations were planned, drawn, inked on the cell sheets, and colored, the cells were finally put together and then photographed to film. Traditional animation takes time, friends, and plenty of money. That is part of the reason why we don't see it very much nowadays. However, you might be surprised to find out that many of the ideas and practices of traditional animation have carried over even today. And nothing better represents that than the 12 principles of animation, which we'll be talking about next.
Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you're true.
Of imagination, it is one thing to have the technical skills to make an animation, and another to make that animation look good. While not being an animator himself, Walt Disney's best trait was finding and bringing together talented people. And from 1927 to 1935, Walt Disney established his core group of animators, which he would later name the Nine Old Men. These nine old men, and all of the other animators who worked on Snow White and the early Disney films, invented what is now known as the 12 Principles of Animation, a term made known by the book The Illusion of Life by Frank Thomas and Ollie Johnston, two out of nine of the old men. These principles are a huge artistic discovery, as they turned images into characters and characters into the greatest of heroes and the most evil of villains. First is Squash and Stretch. The Disney animators learned early on that by having characters scrunch up or expand out while moving, it makes their animation feel more fluid. Squash and Stretch also makes the impacts of action feel more powerful. Think of Thomas from Tom and Jerry when he runs into a wall or gets a watermelon dropped on his head. Some people think that Squash and Stretch are only for Disney-like or cartoony animations. I mean, us humans can't fit into a keyhole or reach our arms across the room like on TV, but we do still squash and stretch. Think of how your bicep stretches out when you flex or bend your arm, or how your thigh squashes when you sit down on a chair. Second is timing and motion. This principle states that the more pictures you use to make up an action, the slower that action will be. If you make a character run with 5 pictures and another that runs using 20 pictures, if those pictures play at the same speed, the one with the 20 pictures will be much longer. Third is anticipation. It's hard for things to move if they don't first prepare and build up the strength to do so. Just like a batter needs to wind up before a swing, our characters need to prepare for their actions. Anticipation not only makes your animation feel more realistic, but it also gives the audience more time to recognize and understand your character's movements. Fourth is staging. Just like it's hard to concentrate when there are multiple people talking over each other, it's difficult to understand what you're watching if there's too much going on screen. Make sure your movements and story are clear and concise. Fifth is follow through and overlapping action. Follow through is meant to emphasize that all objects have momentum. One way to think about it is that if you're running as fast as you can, you can't stop instantly. It takes time for your body to stop moving as your feet screech across the floor and your arms wobble to prevent the top of your body from flying forward and falling onto the floor. Overlapping action shows that not every part of your body stops at the same time. If you were, say, wearing a scarf while running, that scarf would trail behind you as you run and then stop later than the rest of your body. Sixth is straight ahead and pose to pose. When we move, we're not conscious of every part of our body. If we want a cup of water, we think about grabbing the cup, and then we do it. We don't think about moving every part of our body leading up until we finally get the cup. We just act. In pose-to-pose animation, the animator draws the most important parts of the action, such as grabbing the cup and then pouring water into their mouth. And then they draw the pictures in between to fill the gaps. However, for something like fire or water, which can't think, animators will often draw them one frame after the other, using what they know about physics to guide their drawings. Seventh is slow in and slow out. Like stated earlier, humans can't start or stop moving whenever they like. We need to build up strength to move, and then use a lot of strength to stop. Because of this, we often move slowest when we're starting or stopping an action, and go fastest in the middle. So, if we were to animate someone kicking a soccer ball, you would draw the most amount of pictures as the kick winds up, and then once again once the kick is over and they're returning both feet to the ground. Eighth is arches. Try shuffling forward like a robot. In a straight line, without bobbing your head up and down, without raising your feet or arms, you'll find it's very hard. That is because we move through a joint and muscle system that swings and bends around, allowing us to move. Because of this, all organic life moves in arcs, even if it's difficult to see. So make sure that nothing in your animation moves in a perfectly straight line. Ninth is exaggeration. Taken all the way back from the theater, actors often exaggerate their movements. They open their mouth wide and take large steps. This helps us to understand a character's personality through their movements, and just like actors, animated characters should exaggerate their behavior to the audience. Tenth is secondary action, which is meant to call attention to the importance of small actions that we aren't consciously aware of. We may lick our lips before we eat, or curl our hair when we're nervous or shy. And it's these little actions that can make an animated character feel more human. 11th is solid drawing, which focuses on the importance of making characters with volume, which can be thought of as creating characters that look 3D rather than flat. And finally, 12th is appeal, which, just as it sounds, refers to how appealing a character looks or acts. And appealing doesn't just mean cute, it can mean sinister, brave, or funny. Now, we've been talking a lot about Disney. And that's because their animators and the so-called golden age of animation from the 1930s to the 50s dramatically changed how animation is made on a technical and artistic level. But they alone did not turn entertainment into what we know today. And those people are who we're gonna cover next. Stay tuned to the Children's Hour.
In the background, you're hearing Powerhouse by Raymond Scott. That's a classic tune that can be found in the Looney Tunes and Tom and Jerry TV shows. Before that, Pure Imagination, a cover by Uncle Rock. And it was originally from the film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. You're listening to the Children's Hour, and today we're learning about animation with our intern, Daniel. You can find educational learning materials that go with this episode at childrenshour.org. Look for animation.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio. We'll be right back.
The Children's Hour is now producing weekly educational modules to go with every episode, thanks to a grant from the Albuquerque Community Foundation. You can support this effort too. Go to childrenshour.org and click donate. The Children's Hour is grateful to the Outpost Performance Space in Albuquerque, New Mexico for hosting our recordings. Many thanks to New Mexico Arts, a division of the New Mexico Department of Cultural Affairs, and the National Endowment for the Arts for their support of the Children's Hour. The Children's Hour is grateful to the City of Albuquerque Cultural Services Department and the Urban Enhancement Trust Fund for their support.